So I would like to start on page one. Also, hi,
hey,
everybody.
Hey, should we start, like, from, like, an intro?
Yeah, like an intro.
Or are we doing in media res?
No, thank you. Let's do an intro, but you have to do it because I'm bad at it.
Okay. Hello, everyone. This is my calming
NPR voice.
Hello. This is not NPR. Welcome, everyone, to the Ribbon Book Club, the Dear America podcast, where I, Jen Voss, make very direct eye contact with my lovely co-host and friend,
the violently absurd Kate Reed.
Yes, there we go.
Oh, you what? That was, I was supposed to have a cue.
Yeah, I was watching.
You have to point at me when it's my turn to talk.
To be fair, I was just staring at you unblinking the
entire
time.
Just lost in my lizard eyes.
Lost in your lizard eyes. So today we're talking about, we are punchy today, so this is going to be great. We're talking about.
Woke me up at 3:30 in the morning, so.
Absurd. We are talking about a very serious and poignant time in America's history, so it seems like the perfect opportunity to me have me feel a little drunk.
Let's be very, very silly. We're talking about the third book of our season, right?
Third book, yeah, seasons, who cares?
Right. So sixth book overall.
Listen, you, right, numbers why are, would you do this to me?
Numbers are crap. Who knows?
You know who I am.
The book is I Thought My Soul Would Rise and Fly, the Diary of Patsy, a Freed Girl of Mars Bluff, South Carolina, 1865.
This book is a Coretta Scott King honor book, which tells you.
Mine doesn't say anything
about
that.
It's going to be quality. Oh, you have the ribbon.
Do you not have the ribbon?
You gave me the no ribbon. I'm using a bookmark like a chump.
Do you want a switchy?
No.
Oh, okay.
It has all my notes in it.
I'll also tell you, I often forget what our podcast is called. So, like, the ribbon has not really registered to me.
It's almost like you didn't grow up obsessively reading these books.
That might be
like
related.
I did. Folks, today I walked around all day long with a sock tucked up my pants. I just discovered it minutes before we started recording. And it's a work day. I was at work like this. Luckily, nobody saw me.
I have had every single emotion today. I've cried like eight times over zero things.
Yeah. Did you watch Hamilton?
Yeah, I watched and I worked out for the first until the intermission and then I went and ate lunch.
Good for you.
So I can do it again tomorrow.
So this book is an award-winning book and it was written by Joyce Hanson. And I didn't.
No idea if she's still kicking. Haven't done any research
about
her.
But she is. Spoiler alert. I love the first half of this book.
I think it is on par with Picture of Freedom.
Yes. I mean, for very obvious reasons, I feel like
there's
a lot
of things connecting those two characters.
Comparing them a lot in my mind because they both are about enslaved or formerly enslaved young girls living on a southern plantation.
Yep.
This one is in South Carolina.
But also, for both of them, they're freedom mm-hmm. is brought about by literacy, and I think that's really the big point of both books.
Mm-hmm.
Although they discuss a lot by not discussing very much. For example, we're talking about power structures mm-hmm. when we're criticizing some of the characters and not criticizing others. We're talking about power structure. There's a lot to be said, even though very little actually gets said. So minimalist.
Yes. So I
and
have
not
to,
in a bad way.
First of all, confess that I didn't read this book when I was a kid. So this was my first time reading it. I think part of that was out of when you read a lot of these books, you kind of know when to spot a bummer coming up. And listen,
they're all significant bummers.
All significant bummers. And
you
this,
told me that you enjoy that one of your favorite ones was Oregon Trail, and that one is a never-ending suffering.
One of my other favorites,
Smorgy,
is about. One of my other favorites is about the Holocaust. It's a never-ending parade of misery here in this series. And it is a common experience amongst my friends who love the series that we would read a few of these books and then we'd be like, whoa, this has been a real, real bummer. So we're going to go switch over to the other sister series, The Royal Diaries, where at least their problems aren't poverty, you know? They're rich people problems. You know, my favorite book there was Princess Elizabeth. And yeah, her mother's dead and she's haunted by the ghost of Catherine her Howard. Mother. But she's rich.
Wait, is there like an actual ghost in it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is encouraging. Right?
It's a great
book.
I do
like ghost stories.
I know. Well, that one is coming down the road. Folks, we are going to do the Royal Diaries once they come up. In the publication order.
I like how you say we, like I had a say ever.
Yeah, oh yeah, this was 100% my decision.
Jen's like, guess what we're reading? The Royal Diaries. Deal with it. Like,
this is the order we're doing it.
For the ride.
So if you're mad that we're not reading them in chronological order, you can at me and I will fight with you online.
Meanwhile, I already have the side reading for the Queen Elizabeth I books. I've got some Alice in Weirs.
Oh.
Sick.
Wonderful.
Save myself $6.
Okay. So, sorry. Anyway, but where were we?
Page one. All right. So I wanted to talk first off, the very first entry is Friday, April 21st of 1865.
Yes.
I thought
what
this
date
would
in
be...
history of that is that?
Sorry?
It feels like you're about to reveal.
Oh,
that.
I am.
Oh.
They wrote this real tight and tidy with Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
At this point in time, and I just made a little note on the page here, the body is on display until that day, April 21st.
Oh!
In the White House East Room before it travels around the country.
Okay, so he's dead.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's been dead for like 10 days at this point in
time. Well, because it's going to come up.
Right, but
you know, news travels
outlets
slowly.
Were so much slower. Yeah. So I just like reading this, I was like, oh, I would have thought they would have started this like in the middle. Cause like Patsy, a freed girl makes me feel like she's getting freed at the end of the book. Not the case.
No,
like,
no, this is about
the
reconstruction.
First 6 pages.
So that's okay. I that jogged my memory though. Of the other reason why I feel like I didn't read this book is that, and I think this is common for a lot of people who are interested in history or even casually, is that Reconstruction is a kind of glossed over period of time.
Well, it's very murky.
It's extremely murky. And it also, and I was just listening to a podcast about this, and I'm gonna shout it out many times, but the first of them is now, You're Wrong About, hosted by Sarah Marshall, a real person named Sarah Marshall, and her guest, Jamel Bowie, who is our New York Times columnist. An expert in Reconstruction.
Yeah.
And they talk about how, like, you know, when you spend so much time in school and, like, also, like, in your free time reading about the Civil War, that by the time you get to the end of it, you're just like, oh, thank God.
Right.
We're done. And you want to just, like, wrap it up in a nice tiny bow of, like, oh, they won, and then the slaves were freed.
And socially, not much changed.
Yeah.
Reconstruction change is super duper slow.
That's the downside.
It is. However, legally, the changes to the Constitution that get pushed through during the Reconstruction are huge. So Jamel Bowie, in his article to the New York Times, Why I Keep Coming Back to Reconstruction, which is published October 25th of 2022, is effectively paraphrasing W.E.B. Du Bois. Du Bois talks about Black Reconstruction, which was published in 1935. But the way that Bowie is saying Du Bois is saying what Reconstruction is that it's the period that was a grand struggle between, quote, two theories of future America. And that set off so many clangs with me. So they start talking about who's going to vie for control, how they're going to get that control. Hang on, I got to go to my other notes page.
Oh, that good page turning Foley work that you're doing.
That's right. So on one side, you have an autocracy amassed of wealth and power versus the Southern Democrats who wanted to reinstitute slavery by force. And on the other side, you had the abolition democracy group that was based on the freedom. I'm sorry, the freedom?
The freedom. My freedom.
The freedom, intellectual gratitude, intellectualism and power for all. It was a movement of liberals, specifically a liberal movement, that was also amongst many labor unions and small capitalists. So not the mega, because we're starting to see the beginning of robber barons in the 1860s.
Yeah, we're going to move into the Gilded Age.
Yeah, we are.
a very pretty show about a time in history that is so fraught with problems.
So problematic. So anyways, this all started setting off clanging with me because it's very much what's happening in our society right now. I mean, COVID aside, the big stories are going to be about how we continue to shape America. We are going to see a massive dying off, really, of the political leaders that have ruled our entire lives. We're going to be seeing a younger, more educated class of Americans stepping up to that plate, a more diverse, a more gender diverse, a more sexuality diverse.
The we're future coming, liberals want.
We're coming up to a lot of big changes, and a lot of people who are currently in power right now find that very terrifying, which is why rulings like Citizens United got through. Do you remember Citizens United?
Vaguely.
All right. So Citizens United was...
Explain it to me like I don't.
Very good.
Which I totally do.
I know that you do.
Okay.
Because...
I'm very smart.
You were around for when Bernie Sanders was running for president, and it's all you could talk about.
I went to a rally, and that was the last large public outing that I did before COVID. Anyway,
so in 2010, the United States Supreme Court put through a ruling that effectively said private and corporate campaign donations were a form of free speech.
Oh, yes.
And as such, could not be curbed or curtailed. Exactly. So it basically kicked the dam down for any corporation with as much money as they want to put it directly into the hands of our politicians.
And that is in no way a problem.
Right. In no, there's certainly no problem there. So it's something
to sponsor us.
Something to be thought about. I also want to discuss briefly about, even though our character, Patsy, doesn't really get into the politics of what's happening.
I think this is a book where you really need to dig into the context of politics. And
well,
yeah.
What I'll make one point, and then we're going to get to the context.
I wasn't trying to hurry you around along. I was trying to be like, no, this is good. And this episode's going to be a million years long, but it's fine.
I don't want
it's
that.
Good.
Dinner's at 7.
Dinner's at 7.
Sorry, guys. I slaved all day.
If we only make it to page 3, that's okay. You know what?
It is not. So, at the founding of the United States.
Oh, we're going way back.
So there were more than two parties, actually. There were many, many, many small parties, but it quickly sort of formed
there
into
was,
two
like,
general
one
ideas.
There weren't any official parties.
Also true.
Because George Washington famously was like, guys, can't we all get along?
Right, no parties while I'm gone, guys.
No parties. Yeah. Yeah, George Washington thought he could make that work.
Tragically, he could not.
It was never going to work, let's be honest.
But what's important is that there were the Southern Democrats. And even though it says the word Democrat.
Yeah. Democratic.
Not the Democrats that you would know. The parties switched platforms after the Civil War. So if you are, you know, looking at back to politics of this time and you keep reading about the evil Southern Democrats and you're like, just like today's Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, you're wrong.
Well, and Republicans saying that they are the party of Lincoln.
Oh, my God.
They would have.
Can I tell you?
Hated Lincoln.
Like, especially when you, I was raised by liberals. Yeah. My father has such a crush on Abraham Lincoln.
I know this.
That
and it's
anytime
so cute
a, like,
and funny.
Actual Republican brings out how they're the party of Lincoln, I watch my dad's eyes turn black. And just, like, you can see he's, like, really fighting for control of his soul to not just, like, do something evil.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of him that, to my knowledge, he's not committed any like homicides yet, but if I'd look the other way.
to the government agencies listening, he has not done anything wrong.
You didn't see your thing.
But yeah, when you hear people in the context of this time period talk about Democrats and Republicans, that is not the same platform. They did essentially switch, although you can't really compare either of them one-to-one to today's parties. Just because
basically, the Republicans were largely based in the North.
Yeah.
Democrats were largely in the South. Republicans were often abolitionists, yeah. Anti-slavery.
Yeah.
After the war, Northern representatives got through the Reconstruction Amendments, and then they're like, well, Black people, we did it.
Yeah, yeah. It's also very important to remember that even the anti-slavery Republicans were not necessarily pro-Black people.
Yep. Very true.
Famously, in New York City during the Civil War, there were the draft riots where mm-hmm. white men were vehemently opposed.
Why should I fight for them?
Yes.
I don't own them. Why should I fight for them one way or another?
Yeah. So yeah. This is us Northern Yankees saying, like, we got our own issues.
Yep.
So as much as we're going to... be talking about the South. We know. It's everyone.
So anyways, those Northern Republicans pushed through the Reconstruction Amendments, mm-hmm. Sometimes the 13, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. In 1886, the Northern representatives, the Republicans, in order to hold on to power, started mm-hmm. playing the game towards the more populous white population.
Mm.
So in light of that, they started losing a lot of Black loyalty. And yeah. then in the 1960s, the Civil Rights Amendment was signed into law by Lyndon B. Johnson, who was a Southerner,
yeah,
but was the vice president of an assassinated president.
Yeah.
So that assassinated president, a Massachusettsian.
Yeah.
Right? So like, yeah. while I'm not being a jerk.
There are some good people from Boston, I think. I've heard. I've been to Boston a few times.
That's yeah, great. It seems like a nice town. Anyway, to get back on track, Democrats became yeah. the party of larger government,
yeah,
but civil rights. And Republican became smaller government, individual rights.
But that's way later than yes, where yes, we yes. are right now. Right now.
Broad strokes.
The year 1865.
Right.
The day, April 21st. Lincoln, dead.
Super dead. 10 days dead.
But we don't know that yet. Patsy.
Right.
Our main character is introduced to us. Shall we? Yeah. So we have Patsy, the first entry. She's received this brand new book. I've never written in a book before. If Mistress Davis catch me, she'll whip me and take you away. We kind of get an immediate vibe for the masters and mistresses. Like, we're already not gonna like them, but right. we get some really, you know, illuminating pieces of information. They have two children, Annie and Charles.
Oh, they do not have any children.
No, yeah, they do.
They do not.
Oh, niece.
Boom.
You're right. I missed that.
As Dan was just telling Danny, I almost always am.
What?
I'll tell you later. Okay. So Annie and Charles are...
niece and nephew.
Exactly. But they've lived on this plantation their entire lives.
Yes.
And Patsy has basically taken care of them, even though she's only like a couple years older than they are.
Yes.
So imagine being a three-year-old who's babysitting.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, whomst among us? So yeah, Annie
and I are both babies of the family, so not us.
No, not us. Famously not us. So she writes, she refers to the book as like a friend. She even calls the book friend. Her own niece Annie gave you to me this morning as a joke. Annie and her Charles enjoy making fun of me, and it was Annie who taught me how to read as a joke as well. So,
but she didn't know she was doing it.
Yes. So we get some interesting pieces of information
right there.
Yeah.
Automatically, just like picture of freedom.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think you could say like, oh, well, that's repetitive. But I think it also is revealing in that, like, that it displays the pattern of, like, people who were, you know, forced to work in the big house had access to things like the classroom where the children were taught to read. And so just like Clotie kind of like teaches herself by looking over shoulders and just paying attention. Whereas it appears that Patsy has, you know, they're actually actively teaching her, but they're assuming that she's not taking anything right. in.
She's playing the dunce the entire time.
And that is a recurring theme in this book.
And I love it because she's making the rest of them fools. Yeah. She's playing the rest of them for fools.
Yeah. Yeah, the more I played the dunce, the more I learned. I didn't read that whole quote right, but that's fine.
So the war is over at this point, and mm-hmm. I'm just jumping ahead, trying to keep us on track.
Yeah, Annie and Charles are sent away right. somewhere. Yeah. We don't know where.
Good riddance to bad
rubbish.
Doesn't
really matter. Yeah. It's just, it's set up so that we know she learned how to read, and then they're sent away so that she has lost this access to reading, because she's no longer in their proximity and she's sad.
But I think what's more interesting about what's happening mm-hmm. is that all the grown-ups, sorry, I'm looking at page 5. The grown-ups hold secrets and whispers hang in the air like strands of moss that dangle from some of the oak trees. Mm. All of Master's hounds was poisoned, and the plantation jail and the whipping post was burned down. Mm-hmm. So there's some sort of vigilante vandalism that is happening. And also, as we continue to discuss, you know, who possibly could have done this, we start seeing that some enslaved people have up and left.
Yeah, some no longer enslaved. Like,
that's true.
Crucially.
But they don't necessarily have that news yet.
Exactly.
But it must be traveling through the grapevine somewhere.
They know that the war is over. So I think they are just kind of taking the opportunity.
Right. It's been fun. It's been been real fun.
Yeah. So yeah. I wonder how, what kind of access they've had to the Emancipation Proclamation, for example. Mm-hmm. So like they could, if they knew about that, they could presume like, well,
I know a lot of Southern papers didn't publish it as a news
story. Because they obviously wouldn't want to spread the news.
Not information they want out there.
There's sprinkled throughout these entries, we'll see like a slow building of like people leaving or these acts of vandalism, righteous vandalism, let's be honest. Like I'm using that word, but it's
right. The fact that, I mean, like first you're like, oh, the hounds, that's sad. Oh, wait, those dogs were used to chase people down who were runaways and literally destroy their bodies.
You can feel conflicted about what was probably an animal who didn't, you know, ever set out to do that to people, but was nevertheless taught
to do. You
want to
know why cats don't get poisoned? Because they don't help the cops.
They're not narcs. Anyway.
You can cut that out. That's not real, but
No, that's fine. Oh, okay. Anyways, but she has this refrain of like, you know, here at Davis Hall Plantation, everything is changing yet remaining the same all at once. And, you know, she knows that the war is over. They know that they're free, but they're still on this plantation kind of going about life almost as usual until people kind of get fed up with it and decide.
Which was very much what was happening with mm-hmm. the working population of Book 4, too.
Yes.
When will this cruel war be over?
Oh, yeah. I was like, you can't use numbers with me.
I'm sorry. I
use names.
So jumping ahead to page 10, because for the most part, she's just introducing us to people who work on the plantation.
She has her own little room in a storeroom inside the kitchen shed.
Which she created for herself. Yeah. I kind of liked that.
She's noticing that, like, what are they going to really do about it, you know?
Right.
Which I love.
I love that energy.
She has like small, like inching, like taking her own initiative and taking some say in her life.
Yeah. Before we get too far away from the beginning, reading is spoiling comes up on page 1.
Oh.
How you can't teach the slaves anything because giving them an education is spoiling them.
Yeah.
So
it's
at first,
illegal. Not just
well,
that
it's also that. Yeah. But were you like, oh, those poor pampered slaves having to read? That's not the kind of spoiling that the aunt is talking about. She means it makes them unfit to be enslaved.
Right.
It means that they will get ideas and rise
and start
up.
Thinking.
Uh huh. Sick Beauty and Abuse reference.
Time. I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've never loved you more. anyway, so I had that highlighted and I wanted to talk about it. So some of the other people that we meet, are Nancy, who ends up being a friend, but starts out as kind of like just gossips with the cook.
Well, Nancy's not a real friend.
Not, maybe not.
She's kind of like, she has been kind of fully.
She just really likes to gossip and there's no one to talk to after cook
no,
leaves.
No, oh no, no, you're thinking of Ruth.
Oh, I cannot. Okay.
Nancy.
So then here's a problem with this book.
Yeah.
If you're going to have this many characters, make them distinct.
I can tell them apart.
Oh, I cannot.
Wow, Kate.
I wrote them down. So we've got
have
Nancy.
Nancy is the
mistress's noonday shadow, which
yes.
I thought was a really, man, we have some great metaphors in this mm-hmm. book.
She's essentially a lady's maid. She's described as being rather young.
Yep.
So I don't
same
know
age
that,
as Patsy.
Patsy. So I don't know that she's a full like fully trained lady's maid, or if she's a lady's maid in training.
We know that she's not fully trained, mm-hmm. but that she's being trained.
Right, okay. But we know also that
Ruth is the one who gossips with Cook.
Yeah. Nancy has been kind of like indoctrinated from a very young age. And it's kind of the comparison. There was a similar character in Clodagh's story. I can't remember the name right now.
Oh.
I know it wasn't Spicy. I know.
No, it wasn't Spicy.
It wasn't Spicy because Spicy was a friend. But yes, the where you are brought into the fold of like
being somewhere between a servant and a pet.
Confidant and a pet. And
yes.
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 And for some enslaved people, they were able to keep enough of their own separate identity to feel like, you're not really my friend. Like, you're just treating me like a pet because you want me to, you want to feel good about yourself and you want me to, you know, be your spy, essentially. Nancy has fallen into that trap. But we have Ruth, who has a son named James. And then we have Miriam, who is the laundry woman.
Yep. Laundress.
And then we have Cook, who we will find out her real name, but she's just mostly referred to as Cook.
Right. And apparently Cook is really mean, but I'll be honest. I think she's one of the kindest people to Patsy.
Yes. And we should describe Patsy, too. So
yes,
Patsy,
because this is super important, and I almost cut you off before.
Oh, yeah.
Patsy is disabled.
Yes.
And I think that's rad, because
yes.
I am disabled, and I like that.
Yes.
So Patsy's disabled. She has one leg that is slightly shorter than the other,
mm-hmm.
and it causes a somewhat severe limp, and yeah. it makes her go a little slower. Mm-hmm. Now, that gives her two advantages. One, people expect less from her.
Yes.
And it gives her wiggle room to be underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So not only do they expect less, when she rises up to more, they never see it coming.
Yeah.
They would never have suspected. So she can get away with quite a lot.
That is truly Patsy's superpowers, being underestimated.
Yes. 100%.
Because the other major way that she is underestimated is that she has a stutter.
Yes.
And it's quite severe to the point where she really doesn't talk very much, because when she does, the words get stuck in her words.
Yeah.
But because she can read and write, she, you know, speaks very fluently on the page. And you discover that, like, oh, hey, just because she has a severe stutter doesn't mean that that's what her inner voice sounds like.
Yeah.
You hear this, like, very fluent, very thoughtful, you know, stream of words coming from her. And then, and that makes you think, like, oh, I bet that's why those children thought that she was too stupid to learn how to read.
Yep.
When she wasn't.
I also think it is why she, even though she and Nancy were taken into the house under nearly identical means,
mm-hmm.
one of them became the favorite and one of them didn't.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is because of, there's a word for what I want and it's not coming out.
Mm.
And that's not because I have like a stutter or something.
You just can't think of the word.
Yeah. There's like a, it's almost like proximity to power where,
yeah.
Okay, so if I'm choosing people for my team, I've mm-hmm. got all the best people and that makes me better than you.
Okay, yeah.
So if I was picking people to be on my team, I would maybe not pick somebody who has an obvious flaw.
Right.
Even if that flaw is a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So mm-hmm. it would be something where, because I was looking for these traits that make me look good.
Right, yeah.
Which is what Mistress is doing.
Yeah.
She's missing out on the true genius that is in her household.
Exactly. Because we'll find out later, like, how Patsy has learned a lot of skills beyond, like, what, you know, her assigned roles are.
Absolutely.
And how she even has to show Nancy what to do. So yeah, we have this little cast of house, but formerly enslaved people. Like, you can't.
On page 10, we discover that Abraham Lincoln is dead. And
yes,
there Cook says, maybe we're not free then, since yeah. the man who freed us is dead.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super sad and also super telling.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, if Barack Obama gave you the powers that you have and then for some reason or another Barack Obama died, oh, yeah. do you backslide it, on it the, that puts, power
I mean,
or those
in
rights?
A very, very real sense, we are seeing what happens when there are wild swings in power between.
Because we're in a second Reconstruction. I think mm-hmm. that we right now are in a second Reconstruction era yeah. where we're going to have to redefine the Constitution and yeah. decide how America is shaped again.
And things that were enacted by one president can just be undone in a moment, you know, by the next person.
Thank God.
Let's not dwell on that.
Hey, are you guys ready to vote in the fall?
So I think Cook is really insightful, and I think she's a bit of a realist, I will say. Yeah. Like some might call her a pessimist, but I think she asks some very good questions that people in their station should be asking, which is, yes, this event has happened, this war has been fought, on paper we're free, but what is that actually going to be like? What is the implication of that?
I'm so glad you said that, because in my notes
mm-hmm.
I kept a list of what freedom it means. They discuss Ooh. In very real terms throughout the book, different characters
mm-hmm.
make suggestions of, oh, okay, maybe freedom is this.
Yeah.
You know, is freedom, oh, it kind of comes up when the Freedmen's Bureau come on page 14.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on page 10. We'll get to that in a hot second.
Mm-hmm.
What is freedom? Is it to get wages? They start out there.
Yeah.
That the master and mistress have to start paying wages. So is getting wages freedom? If mm-hmm. you can check that box, are you free?
Yeah.
Is that the case? And as they continue this discussion, we see, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easiest thing to say
mm-hmm.
that now all workers, unless you are mm-hmm. working off a criminal penalty, which is... Yeah. Part of the Constitution,
yeah.
The exemption clause, if you will.
Yeah.
So no slavery except, but also that takes a very limited view of what it is to be an enslaved person, because they mm-hmm. also weren't allowed to go to their own church, to be taken care of if you can't work, to have your own last name. Patsy doesn't know mm-hmm. her parents, so yeah. she's trying to decide on a last name for herself. Is being free the ability to sass back against your master or mistress?
Should you even call them master and mistress?
That is another thing. Yeah, yeah, they start calling them later in the book, page like 26, they start saying Mr.
Ma'am.
And ma'am.
Yeah.
So I wrote down as a side note for another reason we're in a second Reconstruction is being able to choose your own name, which is a trans issue.
Yeah.
So choose your name, choose your identity, be able to affix yourself your own name,
mm-hmm.
To avoid conscription, to have free time.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. who knows?
Well, and also like in this era, One thing that's brought up with the wages thing is when the Freedmen's Bureau comes, they say, you have to be paid wages, and to enforce this, we're going to have you sign a contract.
Yearly contract.
A yearly contract.
Not monthly, not week to week.
Right. Which you can see the, like, okay, it's a step forward, and I can see how you would think that that's great, but... You know, like, oh, well, you have to revisit it every year.
Jen, I am so glad you brought that up, because that's my other point.
Yes, yes, yes.
I wanted to talk about where we see power structures being enforced that stop this from being the wild revolution that it mm-hmm. could have been.
Yeah.
Right? So, and one of those ways was with the vagrancy clause, that if a black yeah. person is just seen oot and about, right, just out doing stuff, going somewhere, walking yeah. down the road, then they can be put in jail.
Yeah.
And once they are in jail, they can be compelled to work for without wages again.
Enslaved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we just skip to that part? Or do we...
Freedmen's? Yeah, go ahead. Page 14, I think.
Yes. So, yeah, we have a visitor to the plantation.
Or Yankees.
A Yankee soldier. Oh, but it starts a little bit on the previous page. Master called everyone, including the field hands, to the yard. He stood between the gleaming white columns of the house as he talked to us. The government says, I have to pay you wages now. If you remain, your pay will be 1/10 of the cotton crop you bring in, and you can live in your same cabins. And to the adults who work in the house, he looked at James, Cook, and Ruth, and said, I will pay you $10 a month and provide food as in the past. He didn't say anything to Nancy or Miriam, much less me, maybe because we are the youngest of the house slaves. So right there, you're saying your children are not entitled to compensation,
right,
even though they are
apparently
expected to work.
Yep.
So one of the Yankee soldiers spoke next. He explained that he is from a place called the Freedmen's Bureau, and that the Bureau is helping former slaves adjust to being free. You must behave yourselves and work as you are accustomed. Yeah, this is...
It's just off. It's
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, yeah. All field hands must sign a yearly work contract. Anyone found roaming about the countryside without a job or a place to live will be arrested for vagrancy. Yeah, so this is like you...
You're as trapped as ever.
Yeah.
This is not freedom.
Then they start having some questions for them. Douglas, who is a field hand who Patsy has a little bit of a crush on.
A little crushy McCrush crush.
A little crush.
Also, I like that they named him Douglas Double S. Like Frederick Douglass.
Yeah. He was a boy then, but now he's a thin, handsome young man and works in the fields.
I never want to hear about somebody being a viable romantic partner with the sentence, he was a boy then. Because that's, I mean, like, I understand exactly what she means, but like...
But now he's a man.
Could we stop? He was a boy three sentences ago.
Yeah. Sir, Douglas said, tell me one thing, is we free? And then the other people started calling out, too. The Yankee shushed them. Mm. He told us that we are free, but whoever doesn't work and follow the rules will be jailed. He says we are not free to roam about and cause trouble.
Mm. But, like, that's the belies exactly what they think they would be doing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, this is a brilliant illustration of just because they're Yankees doesn't mean that they are like
on the right side of this
Martin Luther King like this
famous Yankee,
right? I know. Yeah. You know what I meant.
I do. but if there's ever a time to give you a hard time, I'm gonna take it. Because that's friendship.
Yes, it is. Then we meet another character, Brother Solomon, who is another field worker.
But also a very important figure on the plantation.
Yes. So he's described here, the man everyone calls Brother Solomon because he does the preaching in the arbor on Sundays, spoke to the soldier. Sir, we will not stay here lest we get a school for our young ones and land for us to farm for our own selves. So he's, you know, kind of first among equals, I would say, of the field hands, where he is, he preaches on Sundays, and he's kind of seen as a figure, like a spokesperson, I think, for the group. And he raises an interesting point, whereas, like, you know, they were kind of promised a school.
Well, I also think he's speaking very well for going back to the why I keep coming back to Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Bowie talks about how W.E. Bois is saying that you have to have financial freedom and educational freedom in order to create a truly equitable society.
Yeah.
And Brother Solomon speaks that part so well.
Absolutely.
Like the fact that he had the foresight to say, especially because I don't believe Brother Solomon has children, to say that we want education for our community, to say that that's a hallmark of something that creates freedom.
Yeah.
He's absolutely correct. Education's the only way out, as far as I can tell.
And I think that they would feel that in that they have been very purposely kept from the privilege of education.
Right.
And, you know, someone like Patsy is practicing writing letters in the dust, much like Clodagh did.
Yep.
And, yeah, so even though he doesn't have his any children of his own, he probably, well, I mean, the fact that he can preach, I mean, you would have to wonder, like, how does he know the Bible? You know, like, how did he learn?
Tent revivals.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not like, art. There was, you know, at this time, plantation owners were not against
religious education,
but at the same time, did they permit them to learn how to read the Bible themselves, or were they only cherry picking certain Bible verses to share with them?
I think it's a lot of cherry picking, but also historically, the South has been Protestants, and Protestants put a big emphasis on reading the Bible yourself. So
if you're white.
If you're white.
I think there's an important distinction there.
Yeah.
Because I think there are,
but I feel like,
as we all know, there are conflicting messages in the Bible about slavery.
I don't think there were a whole lot of Catholic slaveholders.
No.
I'm sure they existed.
Yeah. But this is less a statement about Protestant doctrine versus Catholic. It's more about, do you want to hand the keys to, you know,
the kingdom,
your own liberation to the people you're trying to oppress? Sorry.
All right. So we have the Freedmen's Bureau. I just want to, like, go back to my notes here.
Well, okay. To that point that we were just saying, Master says to Brother Solomon that if they stay, he will give each family 5 acres of land and a plantation school. And they're like, good, that works for us. Promises is what I say to that. The famous refrain from Reconstruction to now is the 40 acres and a mule.
Yep.
Whereas, like, that's what was
that
promised.
Was 40 acres and a mule.
And a mule. And did that happen?
Nope. Just like in... Well, never mind. We don't need to criticize anybody else.
anyway.
Moving forward.
There is the...
bit of a labor shortage inside the house here.
Yes.
Lots of people are missing. Not lots, but enough that
people
we're all trying
to
do multiple jobs.
Out. What page are you on so I can catch up to you?
I'm on 18. And she is going around trying to clean up, but she gets caught up reading.
I just want to shout out that she kind of sneaks into the library.
Yeah, and the two books that she reads are real and are readable. You can read them on Google Book.
Can you?
Yep. So Little Goody Two Shoes, very short, and The Youth's Companion, which was a periodical of kind of like approved short stories, kind of like highlights for children.
Yeah, or Reader's Digest for kids.
Yes. Is there a Reader's Digest for kids?
Probably.
Highlights is kind of, because highlights takes selection from larger pieces of reading.
Sure.
But anyway, highlights, that's very much the milieu. It is lessons and selections of reading and poetry and activities for kids. Not so yeah. much activities in the 1860s, but the rest.
Mm-hmm. But she gets caught by Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And basically she's been pretending to dust, but, you know.
But really slowly. But
really, really slowly, which does contribute to people thinking that she's a dunce. But she uses that as
right.
an excuse.
She
knows full well what she's doing.
She's a snake. Good for her.
Yeah.
They all have it coming.
But she kind of thinks about what just happened, and she reflects and she says, if I'm free, then must I hide my reading and writing? Somehow I don't think I am free or anybody else's. All of us in the house, in the fields, are doing our same tasks. Who did the Yankees free, I wonder? It's a very good question. So, yes, there is, people are leaving. There are about 80 hands to work hundreds of acres of land.
And she's not sure that 80 is going to be enough to get it all done.
Yeah.
Right? There is some peril mm-hmm. here as your workforce starts to leave and kind of upset sets everybody's mm-hmm. apple tree.
Oh, and then we get a good moment from Cook. Mistress comes into the kitchen with her pet Nancy, worrying Cook about fixing tasty treats. But Cook sassed her, if you can tell me how to make a pecan pie out of hominy grits, then I'll make a pecan pie.
They were talking about how there's really not a whole lot of food on the farm right now.
Yes.
The Confederates took a great deal of it. There haven't been enough to bring in everything mm-hmm. that the fields produced. I love this line. I'm on the 24th, page 24, I should say. The date is the 29th. James, one of the hands, has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to North Carolina to look for his brothers and his sisters.
Mm.
And, you know, she has that information, but she's not telling anybody else. So anyways, I hear Mistress say to her husband, how could he leave us without even saying goodbye? He's not ever to come back here. And remember, James was the valet who, yes. when Master
or valet,
got sick,
if you
or
want
valet,
to pronounce it the French way.
Yeah.
We were
when
brought up with
James Dunning. Gets, when Master gets sick, James is the one who sneezes. That they were like Nancy yeah. and Mistress.
Yeah.
So, James ups and runs.
I misspoke earlier saying that James was the son of Ruth. He's not. He's also
there
an adult.
Is a son.
There
of
is
Ruth,
a son.
Though.
I can't remember his name. He'll get brought up later.
Right. Yeah. He's not a thing right now. But he
but
exists.
Yes, James is the valet, and he leaves because he's going to North Carolina to look for his brothers and sisters.
But this was galling.
Yes.
He's not ever to come back here, says Mistress.
Oh.
He's not to come near this house, she cried. He's nothing but lazy trash like the rest of them.
Yeah. First of all, as if he would want to.
Okay.
Come back.
But, like, if you are a person who is so flippin' lazy
mm-hmm.
that you have to hold other human beings in bondage rather than do your own laundry,
yeah,
I don't want to hear you call anybody else lazy.
Yeah. To be fair, laundry was a lot of work.
To be fair, yes. Laundry is still a lot of work, which
just,
is why I make Dan do it.
That is just to say, it would be impossible for any one person to uphold the standard of living that this family has been enjoying for years, mm-hmm. which is the reason why they needed all that help. So it's not as so much that they're personally lazy, although they are. It's just that you physically can, no one can with, you know, upkeep all of that labor
right.
themselves. They're still not good and right in the situation.
Right. Arguably, George Washington, who,
yeah.
as you know, I can't stand,
oh.
Was doing more work and putting more effort out than the average slaveholding white guy.
I
still haven't forgiven
him.
He's
not like the rest of them.
I still haven't forgiven him. We do eventually meet another character who lives near Davis Hall. We meet him on page 27. His name is Mr. Joe, and he is a freedman. And I think he's super duper interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we learn about him because he drives the carriage to church, to the the master and mistress's church.
They
which
make
is called the, a name that I can't remember, that I can't
St. see. Philip's.
Thank you. And he is hired because more people are leaving. So there's kind
or
of...
Or have run off. Yeah.
Yes. And so Mr. Joe is the only free black person I knew during slavery. So he was free even before the war. He had to carry a paper on him showing that he was free, along with letters from the people he worked for, saying that he was a right kind of honest man. Does he still carry those papers on him, I wonder? So yeah, he lives near Davis Hall, and he gets hired. He hires himself out to master and to other farmers in the neighborhood. Cook calls him Mr. Anything because he does any kind of work. This morning, Mr. Joe is the coachman. Yeah, so he kind of pops in and out, and he's been a local, you know, man for hire for some
time. A local freed man for hire, though, yes. Which is super impressive and really cool.
It is also interesting to see a glimpse of, like, what, like, the broader experience of black people in the mm-hmm. South.
Absolutely. So now that we're here at St. Philip's Church, this is the church that
all of the
catechism workers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so disgusting.
Yeah.
First off, if your church has something called a slave galley, you should maybe reinvestigate what kind of church you're going to.
Well, they also had slaves. So.
Yeah.
They had to sit somewhere.
Father Holmes is the character that we're kind of a little bit making fun of here in our writing. Father Holmes has this catechism, and he speaks it up to the slave gallery. It's a call and response about how it's a good thing to be a person who is enslaved because it brought you to God, basically.
Right. This speaks to our earlier conversation about how religion has
kept power
been
structure.
Used to enforce this power structure.
Absolutely.
So do we want to do a little role play, call and response? Or is that feeling
it
like
is 6:42.
Okay. So essentially, yeah, it's like God gave you a master of mistress. Who says that you must obey them? God. You know, what tells you this? The Bible. Does God have to work? Yes. God is always at work. Do the angels work? Yes. They do what God tells them. Do they love to work? Yes. They love to please God. So it's like laying the groundwork for like...
What kind of worker
well,
you
God
should be.
Works.
Yep.
So the
yep.
angels
so
work.
So
you should enjoy working. Now,
and you should not complain about it nor act up.
And then
you should
it takes,
love to serve.
And then it takes a turn where they talk about Adam and Eve. They worked to keep the garden. Was it hard to keep that garden? No, it was very easy. And you think, oh, are they going to make some kind of statement about how you should be happy to be tending? No. That's not where they go. He takes a turn. So what makes the crops so hard to grow now? Sin makes it.
Yep.
What makes you lazy?
See ya.
My wicked heart. How do you know your heart is wicked? I feel it every day. So not only is it saying
this
like
is one of my
God
biggest
made you,
religion. Just the assumption that all people are inherently wicked, that and that you are conceived in wickedness
original
and born in wickedness.
And...
I can't tell you how it makes my blood boil because at the same time we got to save all the innocent babies. Pick a lane.
Listen, we can have a whole separate podcast for that, but we are going to see a very interesting counterpoint to this form of religion in later pages. But what I want to talk about with this is that not only is it saying that God made you to be in your position, but it's also blaming them for why it's so hard.
Yep.
Because you're sinning.
You're
and if you
wicked.
Weren't sinning, then it wouldn't be hard.
And if you weren't sinful, God probably would have just made you white.
Ooh. Yeah, because that is the sin of Cain. That is what a lot of people believe, is that the progeny of Cain are the ones that are made to be subjugated because of that original sin of, you know what, I don't even remember the full Bible story of who did what, but
Cain
and
Abel.
Yeah, Cain killed Abel.
It's real basic.
Fine.
The mark of
Listen,
which one?
I
the mark to... of which one? Who could be the bad guy?
I went to Bible school.
You went to hella religious school.
I went to
school,
a lot of religious
And I
school.
Said absolutely not to all of that.
Yeah.
But I still retained a great deal of it, including Protestant work ethic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's in there deep. So another important point is that the white people don't have to say this catechism.
Uh-huh. Because white people are allowed to read, and they can read out of the book.
Yeah.
and they are allowed to read the poetry and then beauty Patsy that says, is sometimes in that book.
Yeah, Patsy says, one day I will read a Bible for myself and see if it says those things.
I know. Wasn't that smart of her, though? Yeah. Like, she's like, I think you're full of baloney.
Yeah, she's seeing what's going on, and I'm seeing what's going on between you guys.
She starts her life back at home, and she's dealing a lot with Cook.
Yeah.
And she's always talking about how evil or mean and cranky and crotchety Cook is. I thought for sure Cook would be her mom.
Oh.
But she's not.
What a turn that would be.
When Cook goes to leave on page...
Yeah, I think we can...
Page 41.
Oh, okay.
I think Nancy's mother coming for her.
Yeah.
One of the most heartrending scenes.
Yeah, so like briefly, we have more field hands leaving, and there is a moment where
we're
field
on page
hands,
45.
Before we get there, I want to pause on page 32.
Okay,
where
I'll
the
go back.
Field hands go to approach the master and demand that he get rid of the overseer and let them pick their own boss from among themselves.
Yeah,
otherwise they'd leave. When Master reminded them that they'd signed a contract, one of the women said she'd tear it up and there would be no contract.
Yeah. No carbon paper back then. Suck it! Yeah.
So, you know that, Cook said, you know that slender, handsome fellow named Douglas, the one who asked the Yankees if we was free? He speak for everyone. He said, sir, if we leave, you won't bring in no cotton crop and you won't have no corn or potatoes. We still find work, but you can't find 76 experienced, hardworking hands like us in this time of year.
On this podcast, we support unions.
Yes. So they are learning that they have power and that they can wield it.
Better conditions for themselves.
Yeah. And you know what? It works. They get to, you know, the overseer who
is no longer allowed to
beat
them.
We glossed over, but he was, imagine an overseer in
right,
a slave
he's
story.
Evil.
He, it's that.
Right. I don't even think they bother to name him. He's
Yeah, he's just essentially exactly who you would imagine he would be. So he fires them out of the pressure, and they elect Brother Solomon to be their boss because he's a good man, and they like him.
Yep.
So, okay, now we can move on to page 41.
So a woman is, it's, yeah, page 41. We're looking at Wednesday, May 10th. What an excitement this morning. I was in the kitchen cleaning the ashes out of the fireplace when Cook and I heard Nancy. Who is the shadow of the mistress. She's screaming and yelling from the front yard. Cook ran out of the kitchen and I limped behind her. Nancy held on to ma'am. Which is what we're calling
Mrs. Davis.
Ma'am so tight, I thought she'd tear ma'am's skirt binding loose. A small brown woman stood in front of them. Something about her looked familiar. She wore a pink gingham dress. Her thick hair was braided into one long plait around her head. The woman reached for Nancy, but Nancy backed away, clinging even tighter to ma'am. I am her mother, the woman shouted. Back? Nope. I skipped a sentence. You cannot take her, ma'am, shouted at the woman. She belongs here. I am her mother, the woman shouted back. Ma'am turned so red, I thought flames would shoot out of her head.
Flames? Out of the side of my head.
She told the woman that she had raised Nancy and given her a good home. So this is that enmeshment that we were talking about. Nancy is so... First off, appreciative of the proximity to power that she has serving a white woman. Mm-hmm. And also, she is so far removed from the identity of her actual home and mother, she can't remember her. This fairly young girl, because Nancy really is only 13, 14.
Yeah.
This fairly young girl doesn't remember her mother anymore.
Yeah.
Because she's been so enmeshed.
Well, she was taken away at such a young age.
Yeah,
she just literally doesn't remember her. So you know,
which kind of makes me feel like a little bit both sides are right.
Right.
Right. A little bit. A very small
amount. Except, I mean, she's like, oh, but she, you know, She belongs here. You raised her to be your slave. Slavery's done. She don't belong to you no more.
Exactly.
She hurled her words like stones in Mam's face. Then Nancy cried, I don't know you. Like, that is, yeah.
That isn't that gutting?
It's tragic. Imagine being her mother and just being like, you should want it. Like, I came here for you. But then Sir comes in, you know, to save the day for his wife. He said that legally they could keep Nancy because she is their apprentice and must stay with them until she is 18 years of age. So here's like another little kernel of like the legality of like, oh, you got to sign a contract for an entire year. Anyone who's wandering around is going to be, you know, jailed. Oh, you have to, you know, you signed it. It's, you know, it's the system. It's being lawful, but it's just being used to keep people where
exactly they are. Where they can benefit the people in power, which is what is always happening.
Yeah, and then he threatens, of course, to, you know, if she doesn't leave, to have her arrested for trespassing and vagrancy, which we know would lead to her being re-enslaved.
Although the title would be different, as you would be a member of like a chain gang.
Exactly.
Right.
You would be branded a criminal. Yeah. So yeah, she eventually has to leave, and you know, that's when later Patsy realized that, you know, why she looks so familiar. You know, it's like, it's because she looks like Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just stands there outside the gate for hours, and it's just so tragic.
I would watch that movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you imagine what, like, a great scene in a film that would have been?
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's well written. They don't give us too much detail, just enough to, like, get the meat and potatoes of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, on that note.
Yeah.
This might be a three-parter, folks.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe
I don't
maybe
think
we can
get
our
get
poop in a group.
And... I don't think so.
I really,
so.
I tried. I did want
so
you to
much...
know I tried.
This is a meaty, meaty book. Like,
it's a meaty, meaty subject.
Yes.
The Reconstruction is complex.
And we don't want to.
And we're
just...
not even covering the legal side of it, just
exactly.
like
this
the
is...
social side.
Yeah, this is all just the like kind of human experience part of it. If you are interested in like the rundown of like the order of operations of the Freedmen's Bureau, all these different laws, the black codes, all that stuff, like the ways that, you know, for a brief moment when black former enslaved people were given the right to vote, where they did make some ground, like,
yes,
I highly encourage looking into it because it's a fascinating topic. There we can
that was
post,
quickly yanked back in the South.
Yeah, we can post some articles. I highly recommend that episode of You're Wrong About Reconstruction. Yeah.
He's a brilliant writer too. The book, the side book that I'm reading this time, that full disclosure, I have not even cracked this yet.
Wow.
For about 20 wow. years was considered the book on the Reconstruction. It's uh-huh. just Eric Foner's Reconstruction. This is the updated edition, but I think this was written when I was born.
Wow.
So it's not a subject that gets a whole lot of attention. Right. I couldn't find more than 10 books about the subject at all.
Right.
So anyway, there's a lot to it, and we're only going to touch on really the social side of it. But to me, the legal side is more interesting.
Interesting.
All right. Should we go? We got to eat.
We
it's
gotta
time.
Eat
we got to feed Danny.
We would have been gone for hours if we didn't have this deadline of our stomachs growling at us.
Absolutely.
You
so, guys would have. I have to eat. And
no,
then I have to go
we,
to bed
I'm just saying
afterwards.
That in regard to the fact that we have gone on for hours in the past. I'm speaking from experience.
That's true.
So we will be back in a fortnight.
Yeah.
And until then, I don't know. Sign off.
Au revoir, mon chers.
Wow.
Hey, thanks for listening. We'd like to thank Erica Page for creating our amazing intro and outro music, Callie Cheering for being the best research librarian we know, and the world's best editor, Danny Heck. Feel free to reach out to them with contact info in the description.